A change of plea hearing has been scheduled for today in the second corruption trial of former Connecticut school construction chief Costa Diamantis. It comes just months after Diamantis was already convicted of bribery and extortion in a separate case here in Connecticut. We turn now to our legal expert on the show, attorney Bill Bloss, who, by the way, is not connected in any way to this case, but can give us some insight and maybe predictions as to what will happen next. Welcome back, Bill. How are you?
Hi. Good. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
Just fine. So this kind of came as sudden news. We knew that this next trial was going to be happening in the foreseeable future. But Friday, just before the weekend, we saw there was a change of plea. He plans to say he's guilty. And just so people know, federal prosecutors have accused Diamantis of taking bribes to squash a probe into Medicaid fraud. This was a scheme that was conducted by the fiance, apparently, of a former state lawmaker. So what do you make of this, Bill? And it's interesting because it feels like it's a different version of Diamantis than the way he was in his separate case that has already ended, obviously, but where he, you know, denies. This one is a different approach, it seems.
Well, this is pretty clearly damage control, Melissa. You know, he's 68 years old. He's looking at a lengthy sentence because of the school construction bribery case. If you pile on another bribery case because of this Medicaid fraud investigation, he'd be looking at easily into double digits for a prison sentence. So it's time to cut your losses, I think, is probably the approach.
So, I mean, if he is going to plead guilty, what does that mean? I mean, would imagine mean that there was some kind of a deal on the table, right? I mean, I don't know what that would mean, a lesser sentence or I don't know.
Yeah, the way it works in federal court, basically, as a general rule, there isn't really much of a deal. You plead guilty to what you're charged with if the prosecutor believes it's provable, and then sentencing is up to the judge. It's a very different system than state court. State court, when you go in and you plead guilty, you know you're going to get 3 years in prison, you're going to get 6 years in prison, whatever it happens to be. There's a deal. In federal court, the deal is you plead guilty, we'll make certain recommendations as the prosecutor, but sentencing is completely up to the judge. Now, I think the interesting thing here, Melissa, is it probably this means that there is not going to be an appeal from the school construction bribery case because he's going to get a prison sentence for this case, I would expect. And so I think it's going to probably resolve everything, basically. That would be my expectation.
I was going to ask that, you know, sort of the connection back, because as I mentioned, he denies any wrongdoing in that case, at all. And so that was actually what stood out to me as well. I'm glad that you said that, Bill, because when the news dropped Friday that he was going to change his plea to guilty, and that the hearing, which was not supposed to happen, I think, until later this month at least, has now been pushed up to this afternoon. Immediately in my mind, I thought, well, then what does that mean for the first conviction? I mean, I understand that he's already been convicted, but I was wondering if we felt like an appeal process is kind of pointless at this rate.
Well, it's certainly in the short term, it's pointless, certainly, because he's going to get separate sentences on each case. Mm-hmm. So has he got a right to an appeal? Sure. And let's say he got a term of years on the Medicaid bribery case, and he gets a separate term of years on the school construction case. So he could have an appeal and try to shorten his sentence by successfully appealing the school construction case. On the other hand, the way bribery cases work in federal court is they kind of, if they're two separate cases, they kind of get grouped together. And they get in, and the number of dollars at issue, whether the person is a state official, whether the person testified and was disbelieved at trial, all of those add into whether there is going to be a longer sentence. So, in effect, it's going to be grouped with the school construction case. So, it seems to me like the best approach would be to kind of throw himself on the mercy of the court, if you will, and say, look, you know, I messed up and I'm pleading guilty on the Medicaid fraud case. And I know and the problem is he testified at the school construction case. So
right.
He kind of can't go in and say, gee, you know, I was wrong. You know, I'm sorry. So he's in a very tough spot, but he's trying, I think, wisely, to be honest. I think he's wisely trying to figure out a way, how can I get out of this? How can I get out of prison alive? If I can, I don't want to be too dark about it, but, you know, at 68, his lawyer predicted that after the school construction case that he was looking at 10 or 12 years, which is, that would be a long sentence, frankly, for this, but it's not out of the question.
And again, we have attorney Bill Bloss here, who is not connected to this case whatsoever, but he's our legal expert on the show. Whenever we see high profile cases, especially ones in Connecticut, I like to get his take on it. So I'm curious, just separate from this case in particular, but in general, Medicaid fraud cases, are those common, Bill? I feel like I hear about them frequently, or if I don't, I'm kind of shocked I don't hear about it more. But I feel like in recent years, I have heard about very similar Medicaid fraud cases in Connecticut.
Yeah, what you've heard about is a slightly different kind of case. You've heard about false billing cases.
Yes.
where providers bill for services that haven't been performed, or, you know, you go in, a Medicaid patient goes in for one thing and gets billed for three things. And Medicaid gets billed for three
things.
That's right. And the government is actually pretty clever about how to stop that. They get cooperating patients and go in and record what happened. And, you know, not everybody gets caught, but it is a very risky proposition for not a lot of money, frankly. Medicaid does not and this is, you know, one of the systemic problems. Medicaid doesn't really reimburse providers at a fair rate at all. And so the providers get tempted to, some providers, not everybody, but some providers say, well, you know, I deserve more for what I'm doing. And so I can bill for two services when I'm only performing one. And that's a crime. And that does happen. What's different about Diamantis's case is that he's not a provider, obviously. What he did is he took a bribe to try to quash a Medicaid investigation for exactly what you were just talking about, overbilling on behalf of an eye physician in Bristol. So it's kind of a step removed from the typical.
Well, in that, kind of getting back to specifically Diamantis' case, prosecutors are saying that, you know, to your point, Diamantis collected nearly $100,000 in bribes from this former state rep. And the former state rep has already pleaded guilty in this case. So you're sort of in a place where, I mean, I don't, in not just his own conviction from the separate case, but you also already have the person who's at the center of this. I would imagine, I don't know if that has anything to do with why I don't want to say a plea deal, but a plea change is happening either, because you've got the guy who's at the center of this alleged scheme, who's already admitted to it. Like, yeah. Diamantis is kind of in a place where, what do you do? You know, right? Like, what, I mean, I would imagine, like, there's nothing really left for this guy other than to say, well, yeah, in the meantime, this guy was also being bribed, right? I don't know if you have really a leg to stand on in this case, differently than the construction case, where it was a lot of he said, she said. I mean, there was enough that obviously proved for him to be convicted. But in this case, you've got the person at the center of the actual scheme.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to argue that there was no bribery scheme where the person making the bribes has pled guilty and said, oh, yes, there was. It's a very rough, you know, it's a very rough defense, honestly. I'm sure that he assessed, you know, where are things going, and what are my odds of actually convincing a jury that there was no criminal deal when the other party says, yes, there was a criminal deal. And, you know, it's just a very tough defense. But I think his lawyer is probably doing the right thing here by recommending, assuming he did recommend a plea deal. I would expect he did. It seems like it's probably strategically the right result.
Well, the hearing is set for 1:30 this afternoon at Bridgeport Federal Court, and we certainly will follow this very closely for you and give you updates as soon as they become available to us. In the meantime, Diamantis, who was admitted to the Connecticut Bar in 1984, voluntarily gave up his law license earlier this year, and really any chance of reapplying in the future, a state judge approving that resignation last month. But we'll continue to follow this second trial, separate from the first case with construction projects in Connecticut, and keep keep you posted right here on WICC. Attorney Bill Bloss, thank you so much. Always appreciate your insight again, having nothing to do with the case, but giving us legal expertise here on WICC. We appreciate your time.